Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Lucy, a Paragon Society novel, by David Delaney, narrated by Matt Godfrey. Chapter 1. Lucy Maddox shrugged off her fluffy terry cloth robe, hanging it on the back of the bathroom door. She had already pulled the blinds, lit all the candles, and the small upstairs bathroom was awash in a soft, warm glow. Lucy stared at herself in the mirror. Her thick, black hair was pulled back in a ponytail. She had removed all her makeup and jewelry, including earrings, per the instructions she had been given. She leaned closer, checking for any blemishes on her face. She smiled.
I could totally rock the natural look if I wanted to.
Lucy stood on her tippy-toes, adding 2 inches to her tiny frame. When she realized in junior high that she wasn't going to get any taller, she had moped around for several months. All the hot swimsuit models were tall, with long, sexy legs, and Lucy was going to be stuck at 5 foot nothing. How was she even supposed to deal? Then Morgan's dad had scored backstage passes to a Pat Benatar concert. It turned out that the awesome, sexy, badass lady rocker is only 5 feet tall. Lucy never complained about her own height again. Lucy did a small twirl on her toes, again checking herself out in the mirror. She was tiny, but gorgeous. All of her parts were the right proportion for her height, and she had just the right amount of muscle tone, thank you, jazzercise. Lucy didn't feel the least bit conceited in her self-assessment. She turned the heads of enough boys, so she knew she was hot. Lucy sighed. Enough procrastinating. She needed to begin. She turned the water on, getting it nice and hot before setting the drain. Lucy had carefully measured out the... In her mind, she still couldn't bring herself to use the phrase magic potion. But basically, that's what the pungent-smelling, yellow-tinged water she had so carefully portioned off into 7 different Tupperware containers was. A magic potion. Magic. Lucy was still super doubtful that the ritual bathing would have any effect. But desperate times called for desperate measures, and she was desperate. Just last week, her parents had once again suggested she get a job. As if. It was bad enough that she had to miss the senior class graduation trip to Paris. A job was, like, totally out of the question. Even if she got a job at a totally rad place like Tower Records, Lucy would still run the risk of people she knew seeing her working, and would be humiliated. It wasn't Lucy's fault her dad had lost his investment finance whatever job because the stock market crashed. Lucy didn't understand why he just didn't get another finance thingy job. Black Monday, as her parents and other people who were way too serious and boring called it, had been almost a year ago. Sheesh, get over it already. But her parents didn't get over it. Instead, they sold their totally awesome house in the hills above Ventura Boulevard and moved to a gross condo in North Hollywood. A condo. The only way Lucy had been able to finish her senior year at El Camino Real High School was by using her great-aunt Betty's address. It had been so unfair. She had begged her parents to let her move in with Aunt Betty, but they said it would have been too big an imposition. So Lucy had had to endure a 45-minute bus ride every morning to get to school. Her parents also sold her convertible VW Rabbit, along with all the other cars, except for a puke-brown Honda her dad bought from some shady guy who lived on the other side of the apartment complex. Lucy's parents didn't use the word poor. They preferred financial setback. Lucy didn't buy into their delusion. They moved from a 5-bedroom house in Woodland Hills to a condo in trashy North Hollywood. They had 1 crappy car, she missed the Paris trip, and her mom and dad kept suggesting she get a job. They were definitely poor. Lucy dumped the liquid from one of the containers into the bathtub. It was only parsley water, but the smell still made her nose wrinkle. A few days ago, she had boiled pounds of the green stuff to create the potion. It stunk up the condo to an eye-watering level. Her parents and little brother had been out, and she opened every window to try to get the stink out before they got home. No luck. The moment her brother, Jason, walked through the door, he started gagging dramatically.
What'd you do, Lucy? Wash your underwear? Because you might want to try using soap next time, Jason teased.
Lucy had made up a lame excuse about trying to cook. Her mom eyed her suspiciously, no doubt because Lucy had never cooked a thing in her life. The tub was full, and Lucy cranked off the water. Now for the part she wasn't happy about at all. Lucy picked up a long, silver needle. The ritual required that she add 7 drops of blood to the bathwater. Lucy hated needles and got woozy at the sight of blood. She studied the needle in the candlelight. It was pure silver, about 3 inches long, and had itty-bitty writing along the shaft. Seriously, the writing was so small Lucy had asked what it said. She was assured it didn't say anything in particular. The markings were just ancient power symbols that aided in energizing the spell. Right. Lucy made sure she had a good grip on the needle, scrunched her eyes up tight, and poked her index finger hard. A small whimper escaped her lips. She peeked with one eye. A large blob of blood was forming on her fingertip. Her vision did that weird spinning thing, and she dropped the needle to grab a hold of the counter.
Whew! Calm down, girl.
When she felt stable enough, she held her hand over the bathtub and, counting the drops, squeezed her finger. Lucy started to panic when the blood stopped flowing at 5 drops. There was no way she was going to poke herself again. She squeezed her finger so hard the tip started turning purple, and she was able to force 2 more drops of blood into the water.
Done.
Lucy picked the needle up from the floor and placed it in her makeup bag. She glanced at herself once more in the mirror.
Here goes nothing.
Lucy stepped into the tub, gently slipping into the steaming water. The ritual called for completely submersing herself under the water 7 times while visualizing her desired outcome. Lucy began to clear her mind. Bang! Lucy jerked sideways, bumping her head against the wall and sloshing water out of the tub. Bang! Bang! Bang!
Hey, I gotta go!
Jason shouted from the other side of the door.
Jason, you little spaz, the bathroom is occupado. Occupado's not even a word,
he shouted, continuing to pound on the door.
It's Spanish for occupied, dummy, Lucy snapped. Now leave me alone, I'm taking a bath. No, it's not. Did you even crack a book during your 2 years of Spanish?
Jason asked.
Go away, you little turd. What is going on up there?
Oh, crap. The banging and shouting had drawn the attention of Sharon, Lucy's mom.
Jason, why are you banging on the door? I need to go, and Lucy won't let me in.
The door handle jiggled. Thank goodness for locks.
Lucy, what are you doing in there?
Her mom demanded.
I'm taking a bath and would like some privacy, please. A bath? It's the middle of the afternoon and it's 80 degrees outside.
Her mom sounded incredulous.
I can take a bath if I want. Now, would you both please leave me alone?
Said Lucy. Her mom huffed.
Fine. Just don't take all day. Mom, I gotta go really bad,
Jason whined.
Use the bathroom in the master and leave your sister alone.
Lucy listened as her mom and brother padded away down the hallway. Unbelievable. Alone, Lucy took a few deep, calming breaths. She started the visualization process once again. The instruction said the more detail you could add, the stronger the spell, spell was the word the author used, would become. As she tried to build a mental picture, her mind kept drifting to the events that led Lucy to even try a ritual bath. It started a few weeks ago, when she and Morgan were hanging out listening to CDs. They were singing along to Faith, Lucy scrutinizing the photo of George Michael on the cover. As far as she was concerned, George Michael was what every man should aspire to be.
He's just so perfect, said Lucy.
Morgan rolled his eyes.
His looks have nothing to do with his musical talent.
Lucy made a face.
Duh, That's what makes him so perfect. He's gorgeous, and he can sing.
She pouted.
I wish I could sing. How much money do you think a hit record makes?
Millions, Morgan answered.
Millions, Lucy repeated dreamily. That would be nice.
Are your parents still after you to get a job?
Yes, they like won't even shut up about it.
Well, if you wanted to have extra money.
Lucy cut Morgan off with a gaze. He put his hands up in defeat.
Sorry I brought it up.
Risking Lucy's wrath further, he switched to a different tactic.
I've been working for the past 2 years, and it's actually fun. You just have to get the right job. For instance, you are a walking music encyclopedia. You could totally work in a record store.
It's different for boys, Lucy snapped.
How is it different? A job's a job.
No, it's not, Lucy insisted. Let's say I get a job at Music Plus or Tower. A cute guy comes in. I'm talking George Michael cute. And I start talking to him about music, like what he's into and stuff. He will quickly realize I know more about music than him, and then he'd be like, I gotta go, I forgot I had a thing. Boys don't like girls who are smarter than them.
Are you serious? Said Morgan, stunned. You're worried about looking too smart, that you'll scare off some random idiot who is intimidated by someone as cool as you?
Lucy ignored the compliment. She and Morgan had been friends since 5th grade. There had never been anything romantic between them, but lately she had caught Morgan looking at her in that dopey way boys sometimes did when they wanted to kiss you. He was one of her best friends. She didn't want to lose that, so she just ignored the looks and the comments about her coolness, looks, and personality. And because Morgan was Morgan, he didn't push it.
Cute boys aren't the only reason. I just don't want to work. I've never had to before, and I don't want to start now.
Working is how people make money and, you know, live their lives.
Not attractive people,
Lucy grinned.
Attractive people do things like model and act.
She held up the George Michael CD.
And sing. Or they marry somebody who does one of those things.
Morgan groaned.
Did you just make the case that being a gold digger is a valid life choice? Your coolness just dropped a couple of notches.
Okay, Mr. Smarty Pants, what are some creative ways I could earn money that don't, like, involve a regular job? Asked Lucy.
Morgan smirked and said,
Well, there's always high-priced call girl or stripper.
Lucy threw the CD case at him. It bounced off his shoulder.
Ouch, he said, laughing.
I'm serious.
Lucy crossed her arms.
There has to be something we're not thinking of. A creative way to earn money that doesn't involve getting naked.
Morgan's laugh trailed off to a chuckle.
He frowned and started clucking his tongue.
You're making that weird sound with your tongue.
Lucy sat up and leaned toward Morgan.
You only do that when you're having a totally rad idea.
Morgan nodded slowly.
Have I ever told you about my Uncle Marcus?
I don't think so. Who is Uncle Marcus?
He's not really my uncle, not by blood, anyway. But he and my dad were college buddies, best friends, really. Uncle Marcus, well, he's different.
Different how?
He's into all that New Age stuff, you know, crystals and psychics and junk.
Lucy's shoulders sagged and she sat back.
Crystals? All that stuff is totally bogus. I need to make money.
I know, Morgan agreed. Most of that psychic crap is total BS. But Uncle Marcus, he's got something. Heck, even my dad says that Marcus leads a charmed life.
Charmed how?
Lucy asked, intrigued.
Everything he touches turns to gold.
Lucy snorted.
Please.
Not actual gold, loser.
Lucy stuck her tongue out.
He doesn't fail. It's like money just falls in his direction, Morgan tried to explain.
I like the sound of that. Does he live in L.A.? Can we go see him?
Morgan shook his head.
I don't know about seeing him. I'm pretty sure he has a house here. Maybe in, like, Beverly Hills or something, but he's always traveling. We can try to call him.
Lucy grabbed her cordless phone off the nightstand and pulled out the antenna, fingers poised to enter the number.
I don't have his number on me.
I'll have to ask my dad, and he might not give it to me.
What? Why?
Lucy dropped the phone on the floor. They had some kind of falling out a few years ago. I tried to ask my dad what happened, but he wouldn't talk about it. It was totally weird.
You have to get that number,
Lucy insisted. That had been 3 weeks ago. The information Uncle Marcus provided was why Lucy was now sitting in a hot bathtub of smelly water, trying to clear her mind and visualize her desire. Money. Money was her desire. Sure, large piles of money would be great, but Lucy would settle for enough cash to buy a car. She would even take a used car, and maybe a new bikini or two for summer. If this ritual bath thing worked, she could always readjust her goals. For now, though, a car and some spending money. That would be enough. And as a bonus, it would get her parents off her back. Lucy closed her eyes, held her breath, and sank below the water. She counted to 7 and came up for air. The instructions for the ritual were clear. Her movements needed to be methodical with strong, focused intent. Lucy continued, sinking, counting, coming up for air, sinking, counting, coming up for air. Maybe it was the repetitive breath holding, but Lucy began to feel a tingling along her skin. The tingling was soon joined by a low, buzzing sound. Was it the spell? Did the tingle and the buzz mean it was working? When Lucy emerged from her last dip, she wiped at her face to clear the parsley water away. Some still managed to drip into her eyes, blurring her vision.
Oh, that stings,
Lucy mumbled, turning to reach for her towel. An old woman, well at least her mom's age, with scary silver eyes, was standing in the bathroom, staring intently at Lucy. Fear shooting through Lucy immobilized her. All she could do was stare back at the woman. And as Lucy watched in horror, a massive, shadowy thing appeared behind the woman and wrapped 2 huge claws around the woman's arms. The woman started shouting and struggling against the shadow monster, but for some reason Lucy couldn't hear any noise at all, just the dripping of the tub faucet. A jagged crack appeared in the shadow monster. No, not a crack. A mouth. Yep, it was a large mouth, and as it opened wider and wider, Lucy could see that it was filled with rows of razor-sharp teeth. It was clear to Lucy what was going to happen next. The monster was going to eat the woman, right here in Lucy's bathroom in the middle of a hot summer day in North Hollywood. Lucy screamed. She scrambled back in the small bathtub, desperately trying to stand. Her feet slipped out from underneath her, sending Lucy splashing back down into the water. Her head snapped back, cracking against the porcelain rim of the tub. Lucy was dazed and still terrified that she wasn't alone. She blinked, trying to refocus on the intruder. But the woman was gone. She was alone in the candlelit bathroom. A knock on the door made Lucy jump and cry out again.
Lucy?
Her mom sounded worried.
Honey, what was that noise? Are you okay?
The doorknob rattled again.
It's okay, Mom,
Lucy lied.
I'm fine. I slipped and bumped my knee. Well, be careful. Are you almost done in there? Yeah, just drying off now.
Lucy, her hands trembling, pulled a towel around her body, and then she expertly used a second towel to wrap her hair. She clicked on the light, opened the blinds, and checked the window. It was locked. Lucy peered outside, squinting against the bright afternoon sun. She was on the second floor, with nothing but a sheer wall between her and the ground. There was no way anybody could have reached the window. Lucy hugged herself. The instructions hadn't said anything about visions or stuff. Maybe seeing weird things was like a magic side effect or something?
I need to call Morgan.
Lucy blew out all the candles, collected her makeup bag, slung her robe over her shoulders like a cape, and headed to her bedroom. All thoughts of money and the things she wanted to buy, replaced by images of people with freaky silver eyes. Chapter 2. It had been a week since the crazy night at Stanford, and I was still not happy about being sidelined. Society cleaners were still fixing the mess created by Jimmy Tobin and Tinkerbell, the blood mage he had paid to provide him with the love spell that had wreaked so much havoc. Tobin was being hunted, but so far he remained totally off-grid. The body of Dahlia, the girl he kidnapped, had been found at a super-rural rest stop somewhere in Montana. She had been drained of all her blood. So it appeared the dickhead had managed to decipher Tinkerbell's spellbook and figure out how blood magic worked, which meant the Paragon Society now considered him armed and dangerous. Nobody knew exactly what kind of magic Tinkerbell had been hoarding in her little book of spells. She had been able to pull off a doozy of a love spell, so chances were the book was full of some seriously bad juju. The Society was looking into the Blood Mage, who, with multiple portals, crashed the Stanford party, letting imps and trolls run loose on campus. The imps had been goosed with the ability to infect people with magic, turning their victims into a sort of frenzied demon-zombie thing. It was giving the Society higher-ups major anxiety, because they weren't sure how it was done or how to cure the victims. Lucy was still in a coma, with zero signs of waking up anytime soon. She required around-the-clock care because her vitals often crashed the second anyone turned their back, which wasn't surprising considering she had been shot in the head at point-blank range. The fact that she remained among the living was a testament to the power of magic. The only bright spot during the past week was that Elise remained in L.A. Her dad had gone apoplectic when she'd called to let him know her quick trip to Palo Alto had turned into an unexpected visit to Society HQ. Mr. Kelly didn't have anything against the Society. It was the fact that Elise would be spending time with me that sent him over the edge. And I was in the place where I felt bad that I didn't feel bad about what he thought. Having Elise with me for the week was exactly what I needed. Waking up next to the soft, warm body of the girl you love is something I highly recommend. It's the perfect medicine for whatever ails you. Plus, she helped me decorate my bland apartment. It turned out to be a win-win-win scenario. Now, Elise and I sat quietly with Cynthia, Wyatt, and Maddie in the hospital wing of the Society. The room resembled a high-end hotel suite, not a hospital ward for the magically damaged. There was a seating area to one side. The walls were painted a soothing shade of green and hung with artwork depicting pastoral scenes. If the ceiling had electric lights, I was having a hard time spotting them. Instead, the room had a sort of ambient glow, not too bright and not too dim, that came from everywhere and nowhere. "The glow does double duty as lighting and as the field keeping Lucy alive," Cynthia explained. I'm not going to lie. Sitting inside the only thing keeping Lucy alive was unsettling. I began eloquently. "You know, my aura has a bad habit of short-circuiting magic. I don't want to be responsible for killing Lucy." "Nonsense," Cynthia dismissed my concern with a wave. "It's perfectly safe. Just don't go poking at anything in the magic spectrum." I nodded. "Got it. No poking." The five of us had assembled in Lucy's room about an hour ago, along with Ellen, the councilwoman with the weird silver eyes. We'd arranged the seating so we all had a view of the bed. Lucy was propped up by about a zillion pillows. Her hair was clean, not styled in her usual array of spikes, and slicked back. I think someone had even applied a little makeup. It was a little morbid, in my opinion. Heck, if I didn't know better, I would have guessed she was sleeping, not in a coma. Ellen was seated close, one hand placed firmly on Lucy's chest, the other on her forehead. She looked like some kind of kooky faith healer. Ellen hadn't moved, not even an eyelid twitch, in over 45 minutes. Wyatt leaned towards me and whispered, "Dude, I think the old chick may have slipped into a coma herself." "Hush!" Cynthia snapped. Wyatt straightened, lips pressed together as if they had moved on their own. I stifled a chuckle. The kid cracked me up. Ellen suddenly jerked upright, pulling her hands from Lucy like she received an electric shock. "Ellen?" Cynthia rose from her chair. Ellen loosened the collar of her button-up dress. "I'm all right,"
The girl is in there, but she's retreated deep into her subconscious.
Ellen stood, gave Lucy's hand an affectionate squeeze, and joined us. Maddie's eyes went wide when Ellen casually used magic to move her chair, floating it into position next to Cynthia. Maddie was new to the magical world, and so the unconscious, casual displays of power still freaked her out a bit.
"Were you able to make contact?" Cynthia asked.
"Not quite," Ellen said. "I found her, yes. But her mind has gone into protection mode. It's actively fighting back."
"How does a mind fight back exactly?"
Elise asked.
"Oh, in all manner of ways," said Ellen. "But with Lucy, the defenses are magic-based."
I looked over at Lucy. She's using magic while she's unconscious? Like shield spells and stuff to block you? Ellen shook her head.
"Oh my, no. Lucy's ability is far beyond simple shield spells. Her mind is fighting back with offensive magic. I hardly made it out unscathed just now."
"Unscathed? But you didn't move for like an hour," said Wyatt.
"My body didn't move, but I assure you, I was fighting for my life,"
Ellen said, rolling up her sleeve to show us an angry bruise on her forearm. It was in the shape of a hand, a very large hand.
"No way,"
Wyatt said, surprised. I said to Cynthia, "Do we have to ask, or are you going to explain?" Cynthia's eyes were locked on the bruise. After a moment, she slumped in her chair and rubbed her eyes. Elise gave me a look, because it was very un-Cynthia-like behavior. The chief councilwoman of the Paragon Society seemed not afraid exactly, but most definitely concerned.
"The young witch is beyond help."
"Not now, please."
"A mind out of control is a danger to all."
"I said not now."
"It is imperative we end her life."
"Shut up!"
Shouting at my inner cuckoo was starting to become a regular occurrence. I needed to get a handle on the Ulfeist side of my brain and bring us more into balance with one another. There just hadn't been time. Having silenced the voice in my head, I asked Cynthia, "What are we talking about here? How dangerous can Lucy be while she's like that?" I gestured at Lucy's prone form.
"There is no immediate danger," Cynthia began. "But it can spiral out of control quickly. It's the magic, you see. It can take whatever Lucy's experiencing internally and project it into the world. It's rare, but there have been documented cases."
Wyatt said, "So what if Lucy starts dreaming about the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man? He can, like, appear and start smashing stuff?" He sounded both fearful and excited.
"A stray puff, what?"
Ellen asked. This line of discussion was not going to be useful in any way. I stepped on Wyatt's toe, hard. He grimaced and looked at me accusingly. I shook my head at him, and he got the hint. "How long," I asked, "before bad stuff starts happening? And what do we do if and when it starts?" Ellen looked down at her hands. Cynthia turned her head towards Lucy, avoiding my eyes.
"Oh, of course. How stupid of me for asking. The Society's answer for everything it can't control was death."
It was one of the many things wrong with the Paragon Society. One of the things I intended to address, but I needed Lucy healthy and whole to move forward with those plans. "Do we have any options?" I asked. Cynthia kept looking at Lucy.
"Yes, there is something we can try. It's risky, of course, and..."
Cynthia turned to face me.
"You're the only one who even has a chance of succeeding."
I felt Elise tense next to me. I sighed. "What do I have to do?"
"It's insane,"
Elise shouted again. Everyone else had left us alone. My guess was they didn't want to be around a pissed-off shapeshifter because things tended to get messy. They're going to kill her.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?